Welcome to a Triple B radio play from the world of Sherlock Holmes, the legendary detective created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. In this chilling tale of suspense and deduction, adapted for radio by Jane Feast and Jane Sutar, Holmes and Watson confront one of their most baffling cases, the adventure of the Speckled Band. A young woman's desperate plea leads Holmes into a country manor filled with secrets, danger, and a deadly mystery that strikes in the night. Come with us as we journey into the heart of Victorian intrigue, where every clue counts and nothing is quite as it seems.
Today, dear listener, I wish to share with you a story of what it is to spend time beating a most diabolical criminal at his own game in the company of one of the greatest investigative minds of our generation. This story will allow you to witness the genius mind of my own intimate friend, Sherlock Holmes. I cannot recall another amongst the many cases we have travailed upon together which presents more singular features than that which I shall share with you now. I am certain that you are already well acquainted with the fantastic stories that abound regarding my good friend, so I shall not delay the commencement of the tale by delivering a long description of the man, Sherlock Holmes. Suffice it to say, this case began early on a crisp autumn morning, and although I ended up pleased to partake in this adventure, I blinked in some surprise and just a little resentment at the knocking on the door of my room at 7:15 that morning.
Watson? Watson?
Yes, Holmes. What is it, old man?
Very sorry to knock you up, but it's the common lot this morning. Mrs. Hudson has been knocked up. She retorted upon me and I upon you.
What is it, then? A fire?
No, a client. It seems that a young lady has arrived in a considerable state of excitement and insists upon seeing me. Should it prove to be an interesting case, you would, I am sure, wish to follow it from the outset. I thought, at any rate, that I should call you and give you the chance.
My dear fellow, I would not miss it for anything.
Excellent. Pray instruct Mrs. Hudson to show her up.
Mrs. Hudson, would you ask the young lady to step up?
Certainly, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
When young ladies wander around the metropolis at this hour in the morning and knock up sleepy people out of their beds, I presume that it is something very pressing that they have to communicate. Ah, but here she is.
A Miss Stoner to see you, sir.
Won't you come in, my dear?
Thank you, sir.
Will you take a pot of tea? Perhaps a crumpet, Dr. Watson?
No, thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Very good, sir. May I take your shawl, miss?
No, thank you.
Good morning, madam. My name is Sherlock Holmes. This is my intimate friend and associate, Dr. Watson, before whom you can speak as freely as before myself. Ah, I am glad to see that Mrs. Hudson has had the good sense to light the fire.
Of course I bleedin' did, as though a bleedin' day goes by in this bleedin' house where I would even think of neglecting my duties.
Pray draw up to it, for I observe that you are shivering.
It is not the cold which makes me shiver.
What, then?
It is fear, Mr. Holmes. It is terror.
You must not fear. We shall soon set matters right, I have no doubt.
You have come in by train this morning, I see.
You know me, then?
No, but I observe the second half of a return ticket in the palm of your left glove. You must have started early, and yet you had a good drive in a dog cart, along heavy roads, and on the side opposite from that of the driver, before you reached the station.
That is so, but how?
There is no mystery, madam.
The left arm of your jacket is spattered with mud in no less than 7 places. The marks are perfectly fresh. There is no vehicle save a dogcart which throws up mud in that way, and then only when you sit on the left-hand side of the driver.
Whatever your reasons may be, you are perfectly correct. I started from home before 6, reached Leatherhead at 20 past, and came in by the first train to Waterloo. Sir, I can stand this strain no longer. I shall go mad if it continues. I have no one to turn to, none save only one who cares for me, and he, poor fellow, can be of little aid. I have heard of you, Mr. Holmes. I heard of you from a Mrs. Farintosh, whom you helped in the hour of her sorest need.
Farintosh. Ah, yes. Before your time, Watson, it concerned an opal tiara.
Certainly so, Mr. Holmes. But alas, the very horror of my situation lies in the fact that my fears are so vague, and my suspicions depend so entirely on small points, which might even seem trivial to another, that even he to whom of all others I have a right to look for help and advice looks upon all that I tell him about it as the fancies of a nervous woman. But I have heard, Mr. Holmes, that you can see deeply into the manifold wickedness of the human heart. You may advise me how to walk amid the dangers which encompass me.
I am all attention, madam.
Oh, sir, do you not think that you could help me, and at least throw a little light through the dense darkness which surrounds me? At present, it is out of my power to reward you for your services, but in a month or 6 weeks I shall be married, with the control of my own income, and then at least you shall not find me ungrateful.
I can only say, madam, that I shall be happy to devote the same care to your case as I did to that of your friend. As to reward, well, my profession is its own reward, but you are at liberty to defray whatever expenses I may be put to at the time which suits you best. And now I beg that you will lay before us everything that may help us in forming an opinion on the matter.
Very well. My name is Helen Stoner, and I am living with my stepfather, who is the last survivor of one of the oldest Saxon families in England, the Roylotts of Stoke Moran, on the western border of Surrey.
The name is familiar to me. Roylott.
Dr. Grimsby Roylott is my stepfather, a most formidable individual.
Surely is not he whom you fear, my dear?
What I fear is the whistle in the night. I am a light sleeper, and it has awakened me.
A whistle?
I know that it must sound strange, but it is a whistle which heralded the death of my dear sister, Julia.
And when was this?
2 years ago. She heard the sound of a low, clear whistle each of several nights, just before she met her horrible death.
Helen, my dearest, may I sit with you this evening? I cannot stay in my room whilst stepfather smokes those awful Indian cigars. I swear the smell comes directly through the ventilator and lands squarely on my pillow.
Of course, Julia. You must be excited about your upcoming wedding. Not only do you have a man who adores you, but you'll finally get to leave this awful place. Have you noticed the changes which have overcome stepfather since we lost mother in the accident?
How can I not have done? He has become a far different man since we left our home back in India. I had thought he was an embarrassment to dear mother's memory while we remained in London, but he has become unbearable since we relocated here to Stoke Moran. At least he tried to make friends with the neighbours while in London.
Indeed, he did. But here, if he sees a neighbour at all, he invariably picks a fight with him.
And he will insist on surrounding himself with such peculiar and unacceptable types.
Gypsies. Imagine allowing them to camp right here, on our grounds.
Never mind the gypsies nor the camping, when he disappears for weeks on end travelling about with them. I'm far more concerned about the exotic animals his correspondents send him. The cheetah, and that loathsome creature he affectionately calls his pet baboon.
That they are uncaged and widely wandering about the grounds at all hours. Little wonder we can't retain help.
They strike terror into every individual who sets foot upon the grounds.
And into plenty who don't.
Truer word has never been said. But I will give him this. He has not raised a single word of objection against my marriage.
I can barely believe it's only 2 weeks off. I'll miss you fiercely, Julia.
And I you, my little matching twin. But I'm happy.
And for that, I am very grateful and glad. Is that midnight already? We'd best turn in.
Of course, Helen. Surely he's finished smoking those horrible cigars by now. Helen?
Yes?
Tell me, Helen, have you ever... No, it's too silly. Good night.
Have I ever what?
Well, have you ever heard the sound of a whistle in the dead of night?
A whistle? At night? What an odd question.
But tell me, have you?
Well, no, never.
I suppose that you could not possibly whistle yourself in your sleep?
Not very likely. I don't whistle all that well when I'm awake.
Because, Helen, during the last few nights, I'm certain that I've heard a low, clear whistle repeated several times. It has awakened me.
When has this been?
3 o'clock or near enough. I cannot tell where it has come from. Perhaps from the next room, perhaps from the outside. I thought I would just ask you if you had heard it.
You are really certain you've heard it?
Positive.
Well, our stepfather's room is next to yours. He sometimes does strange things, but even for him, whistling at 3 o'clock in the morning is too peculiar. You must have heard some strange noise from the outside.
The gypsies? Or one of our stepfather's wretched animals?
Very likely that dreadful baboon. Ugh.
Yet, if it were the baboon or some other cause outside on the lawn, I wonder that you did not hear it also.
Ah, but I sleep much more heavily than you.
True. Well, I'm sure it is of no great consequence. Good night, Helen.
Good night, Julia. Maybe I'll read just a little before I retire. Ah, here I am.
Miss Stoner, how exactly did your sister die?
Oh, Mr. Holmes, it was horrific. I could not sleep that night. A vague feeling of impending misfortune oppressed me. My sister and I, you will recollect, were twins. And you know how subtle the links which bind two souls which are so closely allied. It was just a week before her wedding. She knocked me up at 3 in the morning. I frantically unlocked the door of my chamber. She was shrieking in a voice which I shall never forget. Julie was gasping for breath, and then, Mr. Holmes, she collapsed. She stabbed her finger into the air in the direction of the doctor's room. I rushed out, calling loudly for my stepfather. When he reached her, though he poured brandy down her throat and sent for medical aid from the village, all efforts were in vain. She was dead almost at once.
And the whistle?
I heard it myself for the very first time that night, as poor Julia lay dying.
Why had you locked your door?
I think I had mentioned the cheetah and the baboon my stepfather kept. We had no feeling of security with them roaming the grounds freely.
Was your sister dressed?
No, she was in her nightdress. In her right hand was found the charred stump of a match, and in her left, a matchbox.
Showing that she had struck a light and looked about her.
What conclusion did the coroner come to?
That was never determined.
I presume there was an official inquest.
There was. The county coroner investigated the case with great care, but he was unable to find any satisfactory cause of death.
How about poison?
The doctors examined her for it, but without success.
What do you think that the unfortunate lady died of, then?
It is my belief that she died of pure fear and nervous shock. Oh, I must have fallen asleep right here in the chair, just as young Mr. Chuzzlewit was about to sail for the colonies. Oh, my neck. Off to bed to sleep properly, or I shan't be able to turn my head in the morning. Julia? What can it mean? Julia? Julia, what is it? The whistle. Just as she said. Good Lord, could it mean? Julia, what is it? Here, let me help you.
Oh, my God, Helen. It was the band. The speckled bear.
Julia? Help! Help, stepfather! Stepfather!
I'm here. What on earth is the commotion?
It's Julia. Something terrible is...
Get the brandy, Helen. Run! Help me! Open her lips, Helen. Hold her head up. I can't make her swallow any. Helen, tip her head a little bit more. No, not like that. Like that! Help me, please!
Stepfather, she isn't drinking it.
I can see that, girl. Run to the gypsy camp now and ask for Boswell. Send him to fetch the village doctor. Quickly!
But, Julia...
Don't argue, just go. Although I fear it is already too late. Her pulse is weakening.
Julia, no! It was the band, she said. The speckled band. Those were the very last words she was ever to utter.
These are very deep waters.
In the time that has passed since that dreadful night, my life has been, until lately, lonelier than ever. However, a month ago, a dear friend, who I have known for many years, has done me the honour to ask my hand in marriage. His name is Armitage, Percy Armitage, the second son of Mr. Armitage of Cranewater, near Reading. Happily, my stepfather has offered no opposition to the match, and that is in spite of the fact that he will lose a certain annual sum from my mother's estate, which will instead go to me after I am wed. Mr. Armitage and I, well, we are to be wedded in the course of the coming month.
Then what brings you here?
Just this. 2 days ago, some repairs were started on the west wing of the building, and my bedroom wall has been damaged, so that I was forced to move into the chamber in which my sister died.
The same chamber?
The very same, and to sleep in the very bed in which she slept. Then imagine my thrill of terror when, as I lay awake thinking over her terrible fate, I suddenly heard in the silence the low whistle, which had been the herald of her own death.
The same? Are you certain?
Quite certain. I sprang up and lit the lamp, but nothing was to be seen in the room. I was too shaken to go to bed again, as I'm sure you can picture, so I dressed, and as soon as it was daylight, I slipped down to get a dogcart to London with the one object of seeing you and asking your advice.
You have done wisely, but have you told me all?
Yes, all.
Miss Stoner, you have not. You are screening your stepfather. Why?
What do you mean?
Indeed, Holmes. What are you after? Why would our guest have need to protect her stepfather?
5 little livid spots. The marks of 4 fingers and a thumb are printed upon your white wrist. You have been cruelly used.
He is a hard man, and perhaps he hardly knows his own strength.
There are 1,000 details which I should desire to know before I decide upon our course of action. Yet, we have not a moment to lose. If the doctor and I were to come to Stoke Moran today, would it be possible for us to examine these rooms without the knowledge of your stepfather?
As it happens, he spoke of coming into town today upon some most important business. It is probable that he will be away all day. We do have a housekeeper now, but she is old and foolish, and I could easily get her out of the way.
Excellent. You are not averse to this trip, Watson?
By no means.
Then we shall both come. What are you going to do yourself?
I have 1 or 2 things which I would wish to do now that I am in town, but I shall return by the 12 o'clock train so as to be there in the time of your coming.
We shall not be far behind you in our own trip to Surrey. I have myself some small business matters to attend to first. I think there is good ground to think that the mystery may be cleared as a result of our trip to Stoke Moran this day.
Holmes, I cannot think what detail you have heard in this young lady's story that could allow you to think this mystery will be solved. I am greatly looking forward to seeing your theory play out in Stoke Moran. Will you not wait and breakfast with us, Miss Stoner?
No, I must go. My heart is lightened already since I have confided my trouble to you. I shall look forward to seeing you again this afternoon. I shall see myself out. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what do you think of it all, Watson?
When a doctor goes wrong, he is the first of criminals. He has nerve and he has knowledge. Grimsby Roylott. As a former doctor in India myself, I recall the fellow's name. It will come to me, Holmes. It seems to me to be a most dark and sinister business.
Dark enough and sinister enough.
Her sister must have been undoubtedly alone when she met her mysterious end. What becomes then of these nocturnal whistles? And what of the very peculiar words of the dying woman? The speckled band.
Ah, the speckled band. Quite possibly a reference to the band of gypsies on intimate terms with this old doctor, who clearly has an interest in preventing his stepdaughter's marriage. I believe that there is good ground to hold that band near the heart of the mystery.
But surely you are not suggesting...
There are many factors to consider. Combining the whistles at night, the band of gypsies, the fact that we have every reason to believe that the doctor has an interest in preventing his stepdaughter's marriage, and the allusion to a band, I think the mystery may be cleared.
I see many objections to any such theory.
And so do I. It is precisely for that reason that we are going to Stoke Moran this day. I want to see whether the objections are fatal or if they may be explained away.
Open up, I say. Good morning. I
demand... My word, what in the dickens is all that hubbub?
Show me to that devil Holmes.
But what in the name of the devil?
Which of you is Holmes?
My name, sir, but you have the advantage of me.
I am Dr. Grimsby Roylott of Stoke Moran.
Indeed, Doctor. Pray take a seat.
I will do nothing of the kind. My stepdaughter has been here. I have traced her. What has she been saying to you?
It is a little cold for the time of the year.
What has she been saying to you?
But I have heard that the crocuses promise well.
You put me off, do you? I know you, you scoundrel. I have heard of you before. You are Holmes, the meddler.
Lower that cane, sir.
Holmes, the busybody.
I say lower it at once.
Holmes, the Scotland Yard jack in office.
I'll take that.
Thank you, Watson. Your conversation, Dr. Roylott, is most entertaining. When you go out, close the door, for there is a decided draught.
I will go when I have had my say. Don't you dare meddle in my affairs. I know that Miss Stoner has been here. She has been here. I traced her. I am a dangerous man to fell foul of. See here how I treat this poker? That you keep yourself out of my grip.
Gracious me, what a beast. I see now why Miss Stoner came to you so swiftly and secretly.
A most amiable fellow if ever there was. Watson, this morning I shall walk down to Doctor's Commons and make inquiries of the legal records kept there. I hope to get some data which may help us in this matter. We shall meet again at Waterloo for the 1 o'clock train to Leatherhead. Oh, Watson.
Yes, Holmes.
I would be very much obliged if you would slip your revolver into your pocket. An Ely's number 2 is an excellent argument with a gentleman who can twist steel pokers into knots. That and a toothbrush are, I think, all that we need.
Holmes. Will you have a portion of my sandwich? I wish to tell you what I discovered about old Roylott.
Roylott, indeed. A Scotland Yard jack in office. Fancy his having the insolence to confound me with the official detective force. Indeed, I am not quite so bulky, but if he had remained, I might have shown him that my grip was not much more feeble than his own. Moreover, when he left my sitting room, I grabbed the twisted poker and bent it back into shape.
Well done. Holmes, once I had the measure of the man, I called into my club and made discreet inquiries with the chaps who had been out in India around 1870. It turned out that the Roylotts were once a family of great prestige, with estates extending into Berkshire and Hampshire. However, in the last century, 4 successive heirs were of a dissolute and wasteful disposition, and the family ruin was eventually completed by a gambler in the days of the Regency. Our Roylott obtained an advance from a relative which enabled him to take a medical degree, and he established a successful practice in Calcutta. However, he only narrowly avoided a capital sentence there after he beat his servant, Ali, to death. He emerged in London years later after a long sentence with a young widow and her twin daughters. It was shortly after the family's return to England, the girl's mother died in a railway accident near Crewe. It was at that time that Dr. Roylott abandoned attempts to establish himself in practice in London and took the girls to his ancestral seat at Stoke Moran.
An excellent folio of discovery, Watson. My excursion to Doctors' Commons, I am pleased to report, was perhaps even more informative. I have seen the will of the deceased wife. To determine its exact meaning, I have been obliged to work out the present prices of the investments with which it is concerned. The total income, which at the time of the wife's death was a little short of £1,100, is now, through the fall in agricultural prices, not more than £750. Each daughter can claim an income of £250 in case of marriage. It is evident, therefore, that if both girls had married, this beauty would have been left a mere pittance, while even one of them would cripple him to a very serious extent. This incident gives zest to our investigation, however, and I only trust that our little friend will not suffer from her imprudence in allowing this brute to trace her. And now, Watson, put away your sandwiches, and we shall order a proper luncheon, and then make preparations for what promises to be an adventurous evening in Western Surrey.
Helen, it would be so much nicer to walk in these grounds if your stepfather could occasionally see to having the paths trimmed. I feel like I'm exploring some untamed jungle wilderness.
I know, Percy, but stepfather is never going to employ a gardener. You know that. He can barely hang on to the one servant he has, and even then, it's only because Mrs. Vudge is old and foolish and doesn't know any better.
I wish I could take you away from all this now, Helen. You deserve a life of beautiful gardens, friends, fun, and of course, a devilishly handsome husband.
Percy, you are a funny one, but you know I can't leave stepfather immediately. For all his faults, I worry about him here alone once I'm gone.
You are too kind for your own good, Miss Stoner. If your stepfather is here alone, leading a miserable life, he has nobody to blame but himself. He lives a mean, small life now, like a miser. And that won't be any better or worse once I've swept you away to be my wife.
I know he's not really my concern, but I can't help it. Mother married him. I feel some responsibility.
As I say, Helen, you are the sweetest of women. I am a very lucky man.
Oh, little buttercup, sweet little buttercup, oh, I could never tell lies. Oh,
good morrow, sir.
Yes,
I'm Wadsworth, Henry Wadsworth, village ironmonger. At your service. I've come to replace the broken window latch.
Mr. Wadsworth, you say? However did you know?
Helen, darling, you've mentioned the broken kitchen window latch about a dozen times. This morning I took it upon myself to stop in at the ironmonger's to see about a replacement. Wadsworth here was good enough to offer to come by and assist.
That's good of you, Mr. Wadsworth. Please, go on up to the house. Mrs. Rudge will be able to help you.
Thank you, miss. Sir?
Oh, Percy, you are the cleverest thing.
You! Say you there! Who are you? Get off my land!
Why, good morrow, sir. I'm Wadsworth, Henry Wadsworth, from the ironmongers in the village. At your service. I've come to fix the broken window latch.
What broken window latch?
The young gentleman, sir, reported to me that a window latch was broken at the house and called on me to repair it with some urgency, sir. I've brought an assortment with me and can replace the one to match the existing fittings.
A young gentleman, you say? Mr. Armitage, the troublemaker. Well, that young man had no right. He does not speak on behalf of any part of this household. Understand? If any repairs are needed on my property, I will arrange them. You have wasted your time. I bid you good day. Get off my land immediately.
Right you be, sir. Apologies for any misunderstanding. I shall be right along. As soon as I be paid.
You what?
Whoever it may be gives orders at your estate, sir. I come all the way here on an urgent call and have left other jobs in my shop to do so. I expect to be paid for that, sir.
Well, you will not see another penny from me. I did not call you, so I will not pay you. Now leave before I call you to be charged with trespass.
Trespass, you say? Sir, you do not frighten me with your threats. I demand to be paid.
Do you want me to throw you off my land?
Ha! A little scrap like you. I'd like to see you try.
Why you... Get off me!
Sir, you are in no position to argue with me.
Let me up this instant! You are crushing me! Help! Help!
Not so tough now, are you? Pay me my fee and I'll let you up.
Doctor, what's going on? Who is this man? Let me help, Shanti.
What's that? Oh, 'tis true! The monster exists! God, it's
We shall
terrifying.
Give you the count of 10, shopkeep. Oh, no. And then my beautiful pet will make you see the error of your ways.
One, two, three.
Crush it to the very devil!
Oh, and we were all getting along so well. Get him, Shanti.
Shanti, chase.
That'll do, Boswell. Call her off.
Shanti, come. Good girl, Shanti. Here's a treat for you.
Very fortuitous that you were nearby, Boswell. I wonder if that isn't a sixth sense, as you sometimes claim that you are so often about when I need you. I feel like a cup of tea after all that. Join me, won't you?
Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson, welcome. Please, let me show you to the room I previously slept in. Did you have a safe trip? Dr. Roylott has gone down to town, and it is unlikely that he will be back before evening.
We have had the pleasure of making the doctor's acquaintance.
Good heavens! He has followed me, then?
So it appears.
He is so cunning that I never know when I am safe from him. What will he say when he returns?
That man must guard himself, or he may find there is someone more cunning than himself on his track.
Mr. Holmes, I only hope that is so.
Miss Stoner, you may be assured on that count. I will look over the doctor's room.
Of course, Doctor. It is on the other side of the wall. Please, go ahead.
Yes. Yes. Looking around, by the way, there does not seem to be any pressing need for repairs at this end wall.
Exactly. There were none. I believe it was an excuse to move me from my room.
There are narrow windows, I see.
But too small for anyone to pass through.
And as you both locked your doors at night, your rooms were unapproachable from that side. Along with that, no one could pass the shutters if they were bolted. Watson, that was a quick excursion. Nonetheless, let us see. What did you discover?
Well, it has a window, the same as this room.
And?
And a plain bed, a wicker chair, and a safe with a saucer of milk on top of it. Otherwise, it appeared to me to be a very sparse chamber.
Oh, my stepfather's business papers are kept inside that.
Have you seen inside, then?
Only once, some years ago. I remember that it was full of papers.
There isn't a cat in it, for example.
No. What a strange idea. We don't keep a cat. Although there is a cheetah and a baboon.
Well, what is a cheetah but a large cat?
And yet a saucer of milk does not go far in satisfying its wants, I dare say. And Watson, did you observe any other implements in the room?
Ah, now that you ask, yes, yes, I did. A dog lash. How did you know, Holmes? It was tied, but not in the manner of a common dog lash.
I should think not. We do not keep a dog, either.
I believe it was not intended for a dog. Watson, was it curled upon itself and fashioned into a noose?
Holmes, how could you possibly know that? What could that mean?
Ah, yes, what indeed. It's a wicked world, and when a clever man turns his brain to crime, it is the worst of all. Look there, Watson. What do you make of that bell rope?
Nothing remarkable.
It goes to the housekeeper's room. It was only put there a couple of years ago when Julia moved into the room. Neither of us ever used it, though. We always used to get what we wanted for ourselves.
Watson, could you try pulling it?
My, it's not a bell pull at all.
No, it's not even attached to a wire. This is very interesting. It's fastened to a hook just above the opening for the ventilator.
How very absurd. I never noticed that before.
You may also notice, Watson, there are one or two very singular points about this room. Look at the ventilator. It doesn't connect to the outside.
What a fool a builder must be to open a ventilator into Dr. Roylott's room, when, with the same trouble, he might have communicated with the outside air.
Do you also notice that the bed is clamped to the floor? Did you ever see a bed fastened like that before?
I cannot say that I have.
The lady could not move her bed. It must always be in the same relative position to the ventilator and to the rope, or so we may call it, since it was clearly never meant for a bell pull.
Holmes, I seem to see dimly what you are hinting at. We're only just in time to prevent some subtle and horrible event.
Subtle enough and horrible enough. Miss Stoner, you must confine yourself to the room on the pretense of a headache when your stepfather comes back. Then, when you hear him retire for the night, you must open the shutters of this window, undo the hasp, put your lamp here as a signal to us, and then withdraw quietly with everything which you are likely to want into the room which you used to occupy. I have no doubt that, in spite of the repairs, you could manage there for one night.
Oh, yes, easily.
The rest you will leave in our hands.
But what will you do?
We shall spend the night in this room, and we shall investigate the cause of this noise which has disturbed you.
I believe, Mr. Holmes, that you have already made up your mind.
Perhaps I have.
Then, for pity's sake, tell me, what was the cause of my sister's death?
I should prefer to have clearer proofs before I speak.
You can at least tell me whether my own thought is correct. She died of some sudden fright.
No. I think there was probably some more tangible cause. And now, Miss Stoner, we must leave you.
If Dr. Roylott were to return and find us here, our journey would be in vain. Please be brave.
If you do what I have told you to do, you may rest assured that we shall soon drive away those dangers which threaten you.
Holmes, I must say, old boy, I feel that we've surely been hidden in here long enough.
We shall have horrors enough before the night is over.
It's a nice household. That was the baboon. There's a cheetah, too.
The smell of a dark lantern. Watson! Watson, the time is upon us! Quickly, Watson! Light the match!
Done! What is it, Holmes?
There, Watson! Look! Look! You see!
What, Holmes? It's the whistle, just as Miss Stoner feared.
As I expected. Now, wait.
Holmes, what in the blazes is going on?
It means that it is all over. And perhaps, after all, it is for the best. Take your pistol, and we will enter Dr. Roylott's room. The band! The speckled band!
But why is Dr. Roylott wearing that band around his head? I must tend to him.
Wait, Watson. That head wrap is no mere decoration. You will notice it moving. It is a swamp adder, the deadliest snake in India. Stand well clear of it.
His chest is no longer rising and falling, Holmes. I believe he's gone. He has died within 10 seconds of being bitten.
Let us secure this creature within Roylott's room. The window is shuttered and the ventilator has fallen shut, so our serpentine friend will stay contained. We must advise Miss Stoner that her reasons to fear have been extinguished. Violence does, in truth, recoil upon the violent, and the schemer falls into the pit
which he digs for another.
But Holmes, whatever has happened? Whatever do you mean?
Miss Stoner! Miss Stoner!
Mr. Holmes! Dr. Watson! I haven't been able to sleep a wink. I have been in such a state of agitation. Please, tell me, what have you discovered? Have you discovered what took the life of my darling sister?
Yes, please, Holmes. Tell us.
Dr. Roylott was a clever and ruthless man, as well as a greedy one. He surely must have been aware, with his Eastern training, that an exotic poison would never be detected.
A poison?
Exactly so. He trained the swamp adder using a saucer of milk and the sound of a whistle to return to him when summoned. Then each night he would put it through the ventilator at the hour that he thought best, with the certainty that it would crawl down the rope and land on the bed.
How could he know it would strike the young lady?
Indeed, Watson, it might or might not bite the occupant. Perhaps she might escape every night for a week.
But sooner or later, I would fall victim, just as Julia fell victim.
So you saw it come through the ventilator tonight, Holmes, and beat it back with your cane. Was it possible that that angered it to such a state it would turn on its master?
It would appear so.
So it must have been that metallic clang was the safe being slammed shut, and the whistle you heard before that, Miss Stoner, was your evil stepfather recalling his vicious weapon to return to his safe.
Miss Stoner, we must get you to safety and call for the local police. You will not be harmed now.
Yes, yes, thank you. Please, also call for Mr. Armitage for me. I'm in much need of his comfort.
I have our tickets here, Holmes. You can stop patting your pockets to find them. I must ask, wherever did you deduce Dr. Roylott's scheme?
I had first come to an entirely erroneous conclusion, which shows, my dear Watson, how dangerous it is to reason from insufficient data. The late Miss Stoner's use of the term band to describe the appearance she had caught by the glimpse of her match, I assume described the gypsies at Stoke Moran. I reconsidered my position when it became clear to me I saw that whatever danger threatened an occupant of the room could not come through the window or door. As I already mentioned, my attention was speedily drawn to the ventilator and the ineffective bell rope.
Holmes, I'm afraid that I still don't see what purpose a mute bell rope served.
The bell rope acted as a bridge for the swamp adder to climb from Dr. Roylott's room through the ventilator and down to Miss Stoner's bed. Each night, the doctor would open his safe and the trained serpent would slide through the ventilator and down the bell rope. Dr. Roylott would wait, expecting it to attack the occupant of the room at any time. Each night, after a suitable period, he would summon the creature back through the ventilator by sounding the low whistle you heard, and then reward it with a sip of milk. Then, by means of the dog lash, he would grasp it and return it to the seclusion of his safe.
An awful and peculiar situation. I'm not surprised that the coroner never thought to look for puncture marks to see evidence of the administration of such a poison. I say, Holmes, you are, no doubt, indirectly responsible for the death of Dr. Grimsby Roylott.
Indeed, Watson. And I cannot say that it is likely to weigh very heavily upon my conscience.
You've been listening to the Triple B radio play, The Adventures of the Speckled Band, a Sherlock Holmes mystery by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Adapted for radio by Jane Feast and Jane Sutar. This Triple B radio play was directed by Jane Feast and recorded and produced at the Triple B studios by Ben Edwards, Steve Jones and Olivia Hughes. We hope you enjoyed this thrilling tale of cunning and courage, where Holmes once again proves that logic and observation can unravel even the darkest of plots. Until next time, dear listener, keep your ears sharp and your mind sharper.